Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to talk about something that's been on my mind for quite a while now. And it seems like the time has come to talk about it, especially because of things going on in the world at the time of this recording. But before we get to that, I just wanted to mention a couple of things that are probably a bit unrelated to what we want to talk about, but I think they are worth mentioning anyway, just to emphasize some of the things we have shared before. So one of the things we wanted to quickly mention is this headline that I saw not too many hours ago. And the title of it is Clemson University. The headline it says Clemson University students protest after school removes feminine hygiene products from campus men's rooms. And this is an article posted on the Gateway Pundit, thegatewaypundit.com, that website that we often refer to in these recordings. The reason why I mentioned this, and it's almost, I want to get away from overemphasizing how dead America is, because America's already dead, so, as they say, there's no point in striking a deceased equine. So we don't want to kind of repeat that over and over again, because it's done. But I sometimes it feels necessary to emphasize a few things just to kind of point out certain things that we've said before, just to reiterate the reality of certain things. But we'll try not to do that too much because there is no point anymore. America is dead. But the thing is that the reason why I wanted to mention this is I was surprised when I saw the headline. Well, surprised and not surprised. But the reason for my partial surprise is the fact that this happened at Clemson. And Clemson, for those of you who might not know, is a especially if you're listening to this recording outside of America, Clemson is a university in South Carolina. And I was very aware of Clemson even as a young kid because I grew up in Baltimore in Maryland, and I used to be a University of Maryland Terrapins fan. And I'd listen to all the football games on the radio. That was in the years when Boomer Esiason came on. That's when I started, coincidentally, quote unquote, to listen to follow the Maryland Terrapins football team. And they'd all, they would play against other teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And one of the big teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference was Clemson. And in fact, the first year when I began to really follow the ACC and the Terps, the Maryland Terrapins, that was the year Clemson won the national championship. I remember they beat, I think, Nebraska in the Orange Bowl in 1981, I think it was, and they became national champions, the Clemson Tigers. So the thing is, I'm very aware of Clemson because of their football reputation. I don't know how good they are nowadays. I don't think they're that good. Maybe they are. I'm not sure. I don't follow sports anymore. Most sports basically are irrelevant to me now, especially because it's all dead now, most of it. But the thing is that Clemson is a university embedded in the heart of South Carolina. And South Carolina is about as conservative, as red, as isolationist, as pro-state sovereignty as you can get in America. South Carolina was the place where the South first rebelled, and those of you who know the story of the history of the Civil War know about Fort Sumter and how that was the beginning of the Civil War, the attack on Fort Sumter in South Carolina by the secessionists there. And so in South Carolina has always had this tendency, very conservative Christian, and always having this dream of someday being their own little republic, isolated from all the evil liberals, that surround them. So it's ironic that this place that you would think would be, the hotbed of conservatism, and where the sanity of, or the insanity of liberalism would not be present. You would think that would be, the last place where you would see a headline like this. And it's just, this just emphasizes that America has no place to hide in anymore. Even in the red states, you will see the seeping in and the bleeding in of the corruption and the decay, because conservatives are trying to fight. It's like trying to fight the wind with your hands. It is a futile endeavor. Conservatives have not understood that there was a tactic. We were given in America the tools, the wisdom tools, to conquer the atmosphere and take back, take the country and take it to where it was supposed to go, to fulfill its destiny. But conservatives rejected that wisdom, and they said, "We know how to fight this thing. Thank you very much. We know we have our strategy, our traditions, and we'll just use this." And it's like trying to fight the wind with your hands. You're trying to stop the wind with your, by raising your hands. It's impossible. And that's why I wanted to mention this. And I won't go into the details of the story. The headline is ridiculous enough as it is, it's just ridiculous. They removed feminine hygiene products from the men's rooms on campus. It's funny that they had feminine hygiene products in the men's rooms to begin with. And then it's even funnier that they realized how stupid that was. They removed it, and then students go out and protest against that. Like, why are you removing feminine hygiene products from the men's rooms? In fact, I say to myself, why are there feminine hygiene products in any bathroom, whether it be men's or women's? Don't these people have money to buy it on their own? It's like, it's that time of the month. Let me go to the ladies' room to get some hygiene products. It's ridiculous. I mean, the whole thing is just utter stupidity. It's just the decay of the culture. That sense of entitlement. Like, even the women who have, who do have the legitimate need for the hygiene products. Can't they go to the supermarket and buy it there? Why do they have to have it available? Like, that sense of entitlement. Like, oh, everything has to be given to me and provided to me by mama, by the mama structure. The mommy government, mommy university, mommy company. It's this sense of socialistic entitlement. So there are so many, this story is so ridiculous. It's so many levels. It's just not even worth, the headline just speaks for itself. So I'm not going to go into details. I just wanted to mention that, just the emphasis that there is no place to hide in the country. For the people who have been truth seekers, some sort of bubble of protection will be created. In my case, I do believe I have to eventually physically leave. I think it varies from person to person. But the thing is that that as a whole, conservatives cannot say, well, you know, we'll just go to Texas or Florida and hide there, or go to South Carolina. It's not going to work because the flood is just going to find you. And you can put up your levees and things, but it's just going to overflow the levees and destroy you. We wanted to mention that. So now the other thing we wanted to say very quickly, and this is very sad to me, it angers me and saddens me at the same time. It's another headline that was posted on the 5th of October of 2023. So that was like a few days ago, like 8 or 9 days ago. And this story was also posted on the gatewaypundit.com. And the headline says, "Outrageous. German family who sought asylum after being fined by the German government for homeschooling their children now faces U.S. deportation after 15 years. And it's interesting now that I didn't realize this until just now that that this headline has to do with mentions homeschooling and that we just talked about South Carolina. For some reason that I can't quite explain, there's a posting, there's an article it's a posting on the website where these recordings are posted that we posted maybe in 2007. So that was almost, 16 years ago, if I remember correctly, around that time, 2007, 2008, or 2006, it could have been. So it was written a long time ago. And we talk a little bit about homeschooling. And we talk about South Carolina, and we talk about these bubbles of unrighteousness, of isolationism. And I have nothing directly against homeschooling, so please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. I think it's on a case-by-case basis, and I would never say categorically it's good or bad. That'd be wrong. It'd be evil to say that. But I can say, without hoping that this is not misinterpreted, that on average, if you take the average, the average of everything, of all the people who embrace homeschooling, there is a subtle inclination towards unrighteousness, unrighteous isolation. That's what I call it, unrighteous isolationism, where people think that I'm going to get away from the evil world, you know, just like the monks, you know, who go up and hide in a monastery, or the nuns who go hide in a convent, that mentality to get away from the evil world so that we can have this pure environment and not be contaminated by the world. And yes, there is a certain validity to that mindset. I understand that. But the problem is that usually it degrades into this thing where I'm just going to get away from the world and wait until I die or, you know, go away on this magical rapture thing or whatever that conservative Christians believe in. And it's no longer willing to admit that we have a responsibility for what happens in the world, that the world will not reach the place it has to reach unless we activate things in it to make it happen. And that's when that's the problem with conservative Christianity. Conservative Christianity is very isolationist. And that's why the churches are powerless. The Christian churches in America and around the world, but let's talk about America, they are powerless to change any of all this nonsense, like the thing at Clemson that we just talked about. It. They're completely powerless because they have gone into this mindset that we are just going to separate ourselves from the world. That's how they think, and wait for some magical transformation that is completely unrelated to what we do on Earth. And they don't understand. No, it's a progression. Things are going to reach the place we want them to reach but it's through our actions. We trigger things, we change the environment, and that's how we will get to that. It's not going to be some magical thing imposed from above. That is, ironically, when you think about it, it's a very communistic and socialistic mindset that these Christians who are anti-communist and anti-socialist believe. It's almost ironic how self-contradictory it is. It's this thing that some higher entity or institution is simply going to impose it on us, and we are just going to be like little sheep, you know, taken to this place and we'll be fine. And they don't understand that our roles in life is our roles of warriors. We are here to transform the earth. And the earth will not be transformed unless it's transformed through us. Now, the source of the transformation and the power, the source of the power, I mean, we can talk about that as a separate topic, but we are the agents of it. Whether the power, whether you want to argue where that power or that transformation comes from, the origins of it, what I'm saying is that we on earth are the agents through which we are the channels through which that transformation is to happen. And if we don't do the transformation, it's not going to happen. Full stop. End of story. It's not going to magically be imposed. So all of this is in the context of isolationism and how that has been a very deadly mindset. It's a very subtle mindset, but it's so destructive because it just enables the onslaught of evil. And sadly, to most Christians, it's like, oh, yeah, well, let the evil abound, because at the end of the day, somehow magically... God is going to come down from above and fix everything, and we'll be fine. And they don't understand that it's not like that at all. Not like that at all. So it's interesting that these two things that we wanted to talk about have to do with homeschooling and this isolation concept. But I'm not condemning this German family because, as I mentioned, the issue of homeschooling has to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. And I would never say categorically it's right or it's wrong to homeschool. Let me just read very quickly the story here, a part of the story in this article. It says, a German family who have lived in Tennessee for 15 years with government permission to homeschool their children may be deported this month after fighting unsuccessfully for asylum. While the southern border remains open, allowing illegal immigrants with criminal histories to enter the country, law-abiding citizens like the Romeika, I'm not sure how to pronounce the name, but I'll just say it like that, Romeika, the Romeika family from Germany, who sought asylum for religious and educational freedom, are facing deportation. The Romeika family moved to the United States in 2008, seeking the freedom to homeschool their children in line with their evangelical Christian faith, the Tennessean reported. The Tennessean must be a newspaper, I imagine. It says here, in Germany, homeschooling for religious reasons is not permitted, and the family faced fines and compulsory public schooling for their children. Homeschooling has been illegal in Germany since 1919, which is kind of interesting. I didn't know that. The European Court of Human Rights upheld the ban in 2006. And that European Court argued that parents cannot use religion to justify homeschooling in Germany. Homeschooling is only permitted for medical reasons, and even then, it's rarely permitted. So, it says here, initially, a U.S. immigration judge granted the Romeika family asylum in 2010, citing a well-founded fear of persecution, quote-unquote, by the German government. However, Obastert's U.S. Department of Injustice appealed the decision, and the family's asylum status was revoked in May of 2012. So, and that's not surprising. Sad, but not surprising. quote, the goal in Germany for an open pluralistic society, unquote, the Justice Department wrote at the time, quote, teaching tolerance to children of all backgrounds helps to develop the ability to interact as a fully functioning citizen in Germany, unquote. So so in 2014, the Holmeikes' petition for review by the U.S. Supreme Court was denied. Despite the legal setbacks, the Department of Homeland Security allowed the family to stay under an order of supervision and indefinite deferred action status. However, in September 2023, the family was informed that they had 4 weeks to secure passports for their return to Germany and was given no explanation for their sudden deportation. Deportation, quote, would tear the family apart, unquote. Patriarch Uwe Holmeike, aged 52, was who worked as a piano accompanist at nearby Carson Newman University, told the Post. I think it's the New York Post. Quote, we are no financial burden for the government. We pay our taxes. We contribute to society and in the community, unquote, he added. According to Kevin Bowden, the family's lawyer, the Obaster administration appealed that the Board of Immigration Appeals, that appeal court agreed with them, as did the Sixth Circuit, and the Supreme Court denied it. We think it is, in fact, an asylum case. We do think they have a well-founded fear, as we testified. I can tell you, quote, I can tell you today, I talk to families today that have fear in Germany and the fight there. The persecution there is very real today as it was 15 years ago, unquote, Bowden continued. Bowden is the family lawyer. So then they keep, you know, they talk about the illegal immigration, you know, how they let all these people who have no interest in the American system, the American values, no love for the country, a lot of them are criminals, and they're just let in and just being bussed into, you know, all these cities and being paid $2,000 a month or who knows what, how much, and being housed in all these hotels. And a family like this is being being persecuted. But it's interesting that that it was in September of 2023, in other words, last month from the time of this recording, that the family was informed they had 4 weeks to leave. September, that was the month that America died. So it's kind of fitting that as America died, America said, okay, you're out of here. And I don't know, I kind of feel bad for them, but to a certain extent, I actually think that they might not realize it, but it might be a blessing in disguise for them to leave America, especially now that America is dead. I don't think they're aware of that, but I do understand, you know, the sadness in them because they have established roots. They were seeking a life of freedom here. They came because they loved America, unlike all the worthless rubbish that's coming through the southern border at the time, at this time. These people love the country, and we're seeking freedom, but you know, they're being denied. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this story is it's twofold. At first, you know, the sadness of how America's dead, and America has had this tendency to let in the wrong people. Like, the right people who should be let in are given so much hassle. You know, the immigration process in America is so, like, you have to go through all, jump all through all these hoops and do all these things, and they monitor you, and they are very harsh on you, like, very unforgiving. When you try to do it the right way, they are very unforgiving. But when you try to do it the illegal way, you know, the easy way, you get rewarded. It's just such a contradictory system. But what bothers me about this is that I have never heard, I could be wrong on this, but I as far as I recall, I have never heard a politician or a major conservative talk about the need to transform the immigration system. The reason that why this guy, the person who wrote this, is Jim Hoft, a person that we have criticized in these recordings in the past, because he's one of the people who set up this Gateway Pundit website. So he writes a lot of articles there naturally. But the reason why he posted this article is because this is a Christian family, and to kind of contrast it with the illegal immigration. But I can assure you, I can definitely assure you that if the immigration thing was not going on in the South, in southern border, that this would not be a problem for Jim Hoff. This story would not be like a major issue for him. So he's just doing it to make the Democrats look bad. That's basically what he's trying to do. But at no point does he or any conservative or any politician, like even Trump or anybody, ever say, okay, we have to change the system to make it easier for the right people to live and establish themselves in America. We have to change the system. And we've talked about this before in other recordings, that the system has to be reformed to be a system or transformed to be a system that lets people in based on character. And a commitment to a set of values and an explicit rejection of third world values. We've said, for example, one of the things that would need to be done is that that we would change the system so that we would try to get, like even people from Latin America, you know, there are a few here and there scattered very, very sparsely across that part of the world who do deserve to come here. But we should set up a system where these people are allowed, but they are tested based on their character. Some form of testing, of evaluation of their character, their integrity, and also their love for freedom and the values, you know, that were relished for many years in this country. And to see if they really love this country or are just here to make some money. And we shouldn't base it so much on family, you know, this family-based immigration system that we have. There might be an element of that, but it shouldn't be that important. And it shouldn't also be based on monetary issues either. In other words, it should not matter too much whether the person is poor or rich or famous or not so famous. We should weigh the character of the person. And one of the important things would be that the person be able to speak the language, or at least show a definite interest or a commitment to learn the language and master it. And what language? The English language, of course. Because that is a reflection of how interested they are in the culture and the values of the country. But the thing is, with Latin America in particular, one of the things that I would do if people would listen to what needs to be done, or what I would recommend, and I would say, and I do believe this is from the truth, is that because of the past history of these nations and how they have violated and raped the country repeatedly, the restriction with countries like countries in Latin America would be that if they want to come and live here, and let's say they want to become citizens or whatever, go on a path to citizenship, they have to renounce, once they become citizens, they have to renounce, they cannot have dual citizenship. They cannot have citizenship with the other country, and they have to commit themselves that they will not travel to their, quote, home countries. And that's even kind of a blasphemous term when I think about it. You know, home country. Well, aren't you home in America? Didn't you come to make America your home? So when they say my home country, you know, it's like, okay, what country are you talking about? Is it America or that piece of excrement that you left to come here? But the thing is that they should make should sign a commitment that they will not visit their, quote, home country or country of origin, let's say, for 10 years. 10 years. And I can assure you, a lot of them are going to protest and go, oh, I can't do that. And my roots and my values. Well, if your roots and your values are so pardon my French, so damn important. Get the hell out of here. Go back to your roots and your values. What the hell are you doing here? If those values and those roots are so important to you. And so it's like saying, by signing that 10-year commitment, they're saying, I hate those values. I hate that horrible culture I left behind, that culture that was setting me back, setting my family back, setting my whole country back. And I tried to change those values, but I couldn't because they are unwilling to change. That's why I'm coming here to have a brand new start. And in a sense, this German family is kind of saying that in a way. They're saying, talking about how horrible things are in Germany and how they treat people who want to homeschool kids based on their Christian values and so forth. So they're kind of saying, I'm leaving behind this culture because I want to be in a culture where I'm allowed to have more religious freedom. So. And they don't want to go back. They don't want to go. I can assure you, if they were told, hey, you can't go back to Germany for 10 years, they would sign that thing in a heartbeat. They would have no problem with that. But the thing is, we have to reform the system and reform it based on, test people based on their character. Elaborate psychological, whatever you want to call it, tests, personality tests, that test the person's character, the person's integrity, their person's love for America and its values and its history, and the principles that that made America special and different from other countries, and so we need to reform. No one talks about that. Everybody complains about all the illegal immigration, but no one complains or makes a comment about how horrible the legal immigration system is in America. How completely it's like it puts up these iron walls of restriction, and they are harsh, they're unrighteous, and they keep the good people out. And that's why a lot of people feel the need to do things illegally, because the legal method is so evil and so bad, and no one complains about that. And that's what angers me about this story. It's this subtle thing, a subtle awareness or reminder, even though the guy who wrote this wouldn't realize that he did just that, but he is basically emphasizing how conservatives, pardon my French, don't give a damn about the people who need to come here legally. And there is no complaint about the how we need to reform, or we need it because America's dead, so it doesn't matter anymore. But how we needed to reform the immigration system to allow the right people in from all places on earth, but restricting them based on character and integrity, and for certain countries, requiring them to spit on the cultures they left behind. And one of the things that we have to sign in that agreement, if they want to become American citizens, is to recognize the Hispanic culture is inferior. Just like that. And I can assure you, I can't sign that. Well, then what are you doing here? If your culture is so damn special, pardon my French, why the hell are you here? Why are you not back there in that wonderful culture you left behind? Oh, it's my heritage and it's what makes me who I am. Well, then go back to what makes you who you are. What are you doing here? And I know they would not sign it, so then can't be a citizen. And a lot of them, maybe because they don't have the values, they are cheaters. The Hispanic culture is one of cheating and manipulating, so some of them might sign it on purpose, without meaning it. But I can, if we do the test, if we did the test, psychological test, the right way, then we would be able to filter out those people before they got to sign that document. And also, it would just be, I know Hispanics are so proud of their worthless culture that a lot of them, even as being cheaters, would never sign that. But that would be a test. Like, that would be like, okay, we're not forcing you to do all these other things we were forcing you before. We're just forcing you to recognize that the Hispanic culture is inferior. That's why your countries are so corrupt, so poor, so underdeveloped, despite all that was given to them, all the resources. But it's never going to happen. But the thing is, the point I'm trying to make here is that the culture, the conservatives, never cared about enabling or allowing in the right foreigners. They always complain about all the raw foreigners coming in, but they never said we need to reform the system because it's an unrighteous system. And these Christians who claim to believe in God, they should feel offended by the system that's in place right now. Because if their God is real and their God exists, it's evident that their God should or would be completely opposed and offended by the current immigration system, the legal immigration system, the hoops that have to be jumped in an unfair way and focused on things that are irrelevant. And the thing is that the country died because there were certain foreign ideas, and I say that in a figurative and in an almost literal sense as well, certain foreign ideas that needed to be injected into the country in order to save it, things that were foreign to us in our culture, in our system, that these foreign ideas were the ones that would have made us aware of how wrong our foundation was, the foundation we were so proud of. And we would have been able to rescue the good things in us. See, the thing is, conservatives never realized that, you know, they clung to their tradition because they thought their tradition gave them freedom. And when you cling to something, you end up losing it. You let it go and you receive it back. You know, it's a principle, principle of life. And they thought by defending their traditional freedoms, they lost their freedoms. And now the country is no longer a free country. And they didn't realize that it was through these foreign influences. And I say that in a literal and figurative sense, these foreign ideas that were foreign to our environment, but which ironically, even though they would have seemed to fight what was inside the country, these ideas were the very things that would have saved what was inside the country. I don't know if I'm making sense, but the freedoms, the things that made America so special and different from the rest of the world, all of these things would have been restored and rescued, and not only rescued, but made to blossom by ideas that seemed to come to kill these things. So by condemning the Constitution, condemning the Founding Fathers, we were going to rescue the liberties and the freedoms that these Founding Fathers and this Constitution were so touted for, if you catch what I'm saying. It's like if we had let go of these things we were trying to hold on to, we would have received them back. If we had let go, we would have received them back transformed and in a more beautiful and powerful way. But we never did that. So America refused to let in the right foreign influence because no, we know what we're doing. Our American traditions, our American values, as we've had them since the 1700s, that's what's going to restore us or keep us a great nation. And we were never great, and we were on a path to greatness, but we lost it, and the country is now dead. And these two things that I thought were going to be 10-minute things have taken much longer than I expected. So I guess it's now time to talk about the main subject that we wanted to discuss in this recording. And I do think that at the end of the day, that main subject is related to this, because it always ends up being related. Now, the thing that we wanted to talk about for several weeks, but never seemed to have the opportunity to talk about, is this thought that I kept having about Kushner. And by the way, you may think that he's saying all of that because of what's happening. Like, but I can assure you that what I'm about to say is real. It's honest. I'm saying this. I'm not making it up. Like after the fact, you know, like it's like somebody seeing a news event and saying, "Oh, I predicted that." You know, 5 weeks ago, but I did tell you, but I'm telling you now, you know, you can say, oh, he's just saying that. But so I hope you do believe what I'm about to say, but I'm being sincere in this. Several weeks ago or months ago, or I forget how long, but it was not too long ago. I was just thinking one day and I started thinking about the son of a bitch, Jared Kushner, worthless bastard who will burn in hell, with his little whore of a wife, Ivanka. And Jared Kushner, I was thinking about him, and I was thinking about the peace deals that he had made, that he had brokered in the Middle East. I don't know exactly what countries they were. I really don't want to know, don't care to know, but I vaguely recall that that Trump, the moron, kept sending Jared Kushner to the Middle East to broker these peace agreements between Israel and some Arab nations. And I think that one of those Arab nations may have been Qatar, and one of the other nations I think was Saudi Arabia. That's how you have to pronounce it, Saudi Arabia. And maybe Yemen or who knows what other countries, but these agreements were touted or portrayed as this great these great achievements of Trump's foreign policy, and knowing the nature of Jared Kushner, to me it was like, oh, there's something fishy there. It may look nice and great, but there's something not right there. And by the way, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong with this, I think Jared Kushner is Jewish. I could be wrong with that, but I don't think so. I think he is Jewish. But the thing is that he was brokering these agreements, and you'd say, oh, you know, he's bringing peace to the Middle East, and he's helping to have Israel, you know, be in this safe environment, finally, to be able to breathe a sigh of relief and not be worried about this constant threat of being obliterated and driven to the sea by the Arabs. But to me, it's like, no, if it's Jared Kushner is involved, then there's something not right with the whole thing. And it's all just superficial. And that's what I kept thinking. And then the thought that came to me was, every time I think of Jared Kushner, I think of the number 666. And you may wonder why. Well, the reason is that Jared Kushner, his father, is a worthless Democrat politician. I think he was definitely a Democrat who literally went to prison for some crimes or some fraud that he committed. His father and his family had a business, and I think they owned or leased, it's a very influential, wealthy family, and they had or owned or leased a building on Fifth Avenue whose number is 666. So the number of the building of the family, you know, where the company was or whatever, was 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan in New York. And that's why every time I think of Jared Kushner, I think of 666, and I think of the Beast and the Antichrist and all that stuff. That's what I think of when I see and think of Jared Kushner. He is evil. The thing is that I then began to remember, I was thinking about all these things one morning, if you're a Christian, you know that in the Bible, you know, they talk about this, I think it's in the book of Daniel somewhere, that they talk about someone who's like the equivalent of the Antichrist, kind of doing some peace agreements, and the you know the scatological parrots, that's what I call them, the people who study the Bible and eschatology and try to derive things from it, and they don't seem to understand what they're reading, but that's another story. The thing is that a lot of them say, well, that those passages in Daniel mean that the Antichrist is going to rise up in the Middle East and broker all these peace agreements and bring apparent peace. But then the peace is going to be violated and then sudden destruction will come. And I started thinking about all of this. I said, okay, so this Jared Kushner is kind of connected to the beast, the Antichrist, the 666 and all that. And then, you know, supposedly the Antichrist is going to broker these peace agreements and look like a hero, bringing peace to the Middle East. And then suddenly that, because it's going to be a false peace, a false sense of security, then destruction will suddenly come. And I was thinking about all these things. I said, oh, yeah. And this was shortly before what's happening in the Middle East at the time of this recording. And then I began to remember one thing that we wrote on the website where these recordings are posted. And you can go look it up. I'm not going to say the name, the title of the article, but it was a recording, an article that was posted on December 20th, 2022. It was the last article posted in the year 2022. It's kind of a lengthy article, and we talk about a lot of things, and I felt prompted to write something about Israel. And if you go to that article, and that, by the way, that article was posted, it was written, the articles are very long, so sometimes, and especially now, that my heart is now kind of saddened by things, it takes longer to write the articles, so they take several months to write out. So this was written over several months, but it was eventually posted on the 20th of December of 2022, and that happens to be exactly, or by quote coincidence, a mere 2 days after the end of the World Cup in Qatar, which is, I think, is one of the countries that signed this, one of these wonderful peace agreements with Israel through the wonderful satanic Jared Kushner. As you may recall, there was an audio snippet. The first audio snippet that we posted right after the World Cup was posted on December 24th, 2022. And the title of that audio snippet was The Tolerated Moorish Invasion. And I believe it was in that posting where we kind of talk about how the end of that World Cup in Qatar made me aware that we are on our way to dying, that America was on its way to dying. It's kind of certified it for me. This thing I had been just dreading, that, you know, like always saying, no, I know things look very bad, but I just can't bring myself to believe it's over. And then after that World Cup, it's as if that we crossed the Rubicon. We crossed a line when that World Cup was being played. And that's when I became aware, okay, the country is going to die and there is no hope for it anymore. So from that day on, from December 18th of 2022, that Sunday, that bitter Sunday, I realized, okay, it's just, now that I think about it, December the 18th, the country finished dying on September the 18th. That's exactly 9 months. September 18th of 2023. As we explained before, the country, America, died from September the 6th through September the 18th. It was a 13-day death, one for each colony in the original colonies of America. So our death, the death of of this country finished on September the 18th, and the World Cup ended on December the 18th. So that was the day I said, we're going to die. It's like I knew it's just a matter of time. We're not dead yet, but there's no turn. It's almost like there's no turning back, like there's no hope. There was a chance. If we had repented on September the 5th, but one day before that 13-day death period, we would have been saved. But I just kept looking. There's no hope. This country does not want to change. So for 9 months, we continued. All I was doing is watching the clock. You know, it's like, you know, watching a game that is lost, but the game's not over. You know, because it's only official until the final whistle is blown. And I just was watching the clock. We were down 72-0. There was no way we were going to make a comeback, because we just didn't want to make the comeback. And the time ran out and we were dead. So this was posted, this article was posted 2 days after that. What we want to mention here is that in that article, if you go to it, excuse me, and you do a search for the words 70 years, 70, but not as a word, you know, not 70, but the number 70, 70 years. If you do a search for that term, you will find something we said. And I'm not going to read exactly what is there. You can go look it up if you wish. I'm going to kind of paraphrase some of the things that are there, but I am not distorting it. I'm going to share the basic core of it. It says 70 years, the truth has given to Israel to set things right. 70 years since Palestine was given back to them. 70 years to begin to acknowledge the foolishness of their ways and to begin to seek the truth, not their own understanding. However, they have chosen to stay in their ways and to pretend that they have overcome their enemies by the power of their righteousness. Yet the truth declares that the time is up. The time ended on the 14th of May, 2018, and they know it not. This is why the veil of protection is coming off of them, and their enemies are now able to destroy them, even from within, for the truth shall not be mocked. And I have never heard anyone ever say anything like that. You know, because everybody, you know, either is, you know, they hate Israel or they are all for protecting Israel. I must tell you, I have a deep love for Israel. I've always believed that three countries that define the time, or at least up until recently, that defined the future of the world or the status of the world were the United States, the UK, and Israel. Not necessarily in that order, but that those were the three countries you had to look to see where the world was going. So I'm not an anti-Semite by any stretch of the imagination. I've always had a love for Israel and an awareness of its importance in the world. But so people either recognize their awareness or hate or think that Israel is some evil occupation force and all that stuff. But no one has ever said, well, yes, they have a reason for being, but there's something wrong that they have to fix. And they have wait, and we talk about 70 years because Israel was established on the 14th of May, 1948. And they were given 70 years up until the 14th of May, 2018. To set things right. And they were given so much in between because they miraculously overcame all efforts to destroy them. You know, the 7 day days war, and you know they had a couple of very serious conflicts where the Arabs were coalescing to destroy them and drive them to the sea and kill them off, and they were never able to. That little tiny nation was able to defeat all these millions and millions of Arabs trying to destroy them. But it got to the point where the Israelis began to think, we're that good. And they didn't realize they were just being given mercy and an opportunity because of how special they were give, being given an opportunity to live, to thrive, and then to set things right. And they never took it. They thought it's because we're that good. And after 70 years, it's as if the truth said, I'm done with you. I'm lifting the veil of protection from you. And I knew that from the 14th of May, 2018, Israel was open, you know, open for anything to be attacked. It was just a matter of time. And the thing is, one of the things you have to think about, and I've shared, maybe I have or have not shared this in previous posting, previous recordings, is that I've always seen a certain ridiculous hypocrisy or self-contradiction with Israelites and their relationship to Christians. You know, the biggest protector of Israel has always been the United States. That's why we were attacked on 9/11. When I saw on the news that about the planes and the Twin Towers, the first thing I said to myself, America's being attacked because it is a defender of Israel. That was, I didn't, because at the beginning no one knew what was going on, because you know, we were not aware that it was a terrorist attack at the beginning. But the first thought, because I went to work and I stopped to buy some food, some breakfast at this place in the building where I worked. And, you know, they had the television on and everybody was talking about what had happened. And I looked up and I was not aware of anything going on in the world at that moment. But I looked up and that's the first thought that came to my head. America's being attacked because it loves Israel. And I knew it immediately. And so we have always been the greatest protector of Israel. And America is has been the ultimate, quote, Christian nation on earth. If there is any such thing as a Christian nation. The biggest promoter and advancer of quote Christianity, corrupted as it was, you know, the matriarchal Christianity, but it was the promoter of Christianity in the world. And I've always said to myself, well, and I'm going to sound anti-Semite, but please don't get that impression, because I'm anything but that. I started saying to myself at one point, and that began to happen especially around 2019. When I began to say to myself, well, don't these Jews realize that their biggest protectors are Christians or people that promote Christian values? The more Christian people are, the more they are prone to be in love with Israel. That's just a fact. I mean, you can think all, you can argue all you want, that's just a reality. And so they are the object of this protection and appreciation from Christians. And what are Christians? People who believe that a man called Jesus of Nazareth was the Mashiach, the Messiah, the promised Mashiach of the Jewish race, the one that had been prophesied from days of old. Well, the Jews don't believe in that this Jesus of Nazareth fellow was the Mashiach. They think that they're still waiting for their Mashiach. So, in other words, Christians are believers in a false Mashiach, according to the Jewish perspective. So, and the Mashiach is, you know, you would think that if the God of the Jews is real and that their understanding is valid, that anyone who is trying to be an imposter of the Mashiach is about as evil as you can get, don't you think? I mean, we just talked about the Antichrist in 666 and all that. You know, the Antichrist is supposed to be someone who pretends to be the Mashiach and isn't the Mashiach. I mean, that, at least in the Christian eschatological understanding of things, which is a little bit distorted. But the thing is that you would think, well, if I'm a Jew and I really believe that I'm waiting for Mashiach, I would want nothing to do with those followers of that fake Mashiach that came to deceive the entire world by claiming he was the Mashiach when he really wasn't, right? I mean, if I'm a man of principle, I don't want to do anything, I don't want to have anything to do with these people who have hijacked my faith, my Jewish faith, my Jewish values, and taken a whole sacred concept as the concept of Mashiach and perverted it, and now follow this guy who claim this carpenter who claims to be the Mashiach, the promised the God, the man promised by Hashem to redeem the world. But the Israelites, they have no problems receiving aid from the U.S. They have no problems. Like, for example, I see this advert on television. I used to see it. I don't see it so much anymore. But it's about the, this organization of Jews in America who send food to the survivors of the Holocaust in Eastern Europe. And it's an organization supported by something called the Organization of Christians and Jews, and it's mostly the people who go and send the food are Jewish people, and they show up in the adverts and they start talking like this daughter of a Jewish rabbi who started this thing. The rabbi started the thing. He was the one who would go to Eastern Europe, but he passed away recently, so it's now the daughter who does it. And she talks about all the food that she sends them, and she talks about these little things that they include in the packages that they give to these elderly Jewish people, that include like menorahs and all these Jewish things. And I say to myself, but everything is Jewish, you know, like, but Jewish, I mean, Jewish in the sense of Judaism. They give food and things that have to do with Judaism. And I, but, you know, this organization takes money from Christians. And even Mike Huckabee, who is a conservative Christian politician from Arkansas, you know, shows up in the adverts promoting, you know, telling Christians to, hey, you contribute to this because we love the Jewish people and blah, blah, blah. So these Jews are taking all this money from the Christians, and then the Christians so kindly give out the money, and the Jews use that to buy menorahs or whatever they're called, and all these other Jewish paraphernalia, along with the food, and go and give it to the Holocaust people. And I go, do they include any New Testaments in that thing? Because if I'm a Christian, it's like, okay, I'm paying for a significant portion of this package that is being sent out. Are you including a cross or some sort of, you know, something that's related to the Christian faith? And I can assure you the answer is no. It's like, okay, so you're taking my money, but you're not taking my message with you. You know, it's just, you're taking your message. And you could go, well, the Old Testament is the common denominator between Jews and Christians, but I'm sorry. Like, okay, I'm supporting you. That's what the Christian should say. I'm supporting you because you're the chosen race, and my Mashiach, the one I believe in, is from your people. So I love you because of that. But I have to tell you, you need to accept my Mashiach, because if not, you're confused. And then the Jew should say, if he's consistent, hey, I believe that a Mashiach is coming, and he hasn't come. You believe in this guy from 2,000 years ago, this carpenter, this imposter. So you can believe in that guy if you want, but I don't want anything to do with you. Don't you dare give me any money, because my God will supply all my needs. And I don't need you to give me any money, because you are a follower of an imposter, a messenger of Satan who came to deceive the world and claimed to be the Mashiach when he really wasn't. But no, the Jew comes and takes the money and goes and promotes his Judaism to all these Holocaust victims. And so there's a certain hypocrisy there, if you catch what I'm saying. And the Israelites, the Israeli nation, has been benefiting from the protection and the covering of the followers of a, quote, false Mashiach. But they don't mind. And they never go, okay, could it be that this guy from Nazareth was really the Mashiach? Because look at how these people love us. And if these guys were from the devil, they would not be treating us like this and caring for us and protecting us. But no, they don't care. And they don't even bother to try to convert these pathetic followers of the false Mashiach to their faith so that we can all wait for the right Mashiach. They don't even try that. They just take the money, take the protection. And they believe that they're in the truth, that they are indeed right in their understanding, and that they have succeeded because of how righteous they are. And they've been like that, and they were given 7 years to re-examine things. You know, re-examine, like, something is not right here. What the right answer is, that's a topic for another recording or another conversation. But what I'm trying to point out is there's something not right with the Israeli nation, if you catch what I'm trying to say. There is a metaphysical inconsistency in that nation. There's something not right with it. And it's been wrong for 70 years. And it's as if the truth was just gave, just like the truth always gives us time. It gave Israel 70 years. And after 70 years, it said, enough. The protection is off. And I saw it in my being. I saw the veil. It's like a veil, like this mantle that was lifted off of Israel. And said, now you're uncovered. And now anything is game. Now you are vulnerable to the enemy like you've never been before. And this was written on December 20th of 2022. Oh, well, it was written before December 20th. It was posted on that day, but it was written around that time. And it's interesting, and I kept saying to myself, you know, was I deceived in thinking that veil was removed? Was I wrong? And I said, no, just like America, you know, had a time limit, Israel also had a time limit. I'm not saying Israel is dead as a nation. That's a different story. It's much more complicated than that. But what I'm saying is, at least in terms of its protection and it being given a special treatment, that ended on May 14th, 2018. Like, enough. Enough with you hypocrites. Enough with you self-deceived, self-righteous fools who think that you have thrived and succeeded because of your own righteousness. But I kept saying, okay, where's the manifestation of that veil being removed? There seemed to be no manifestation. But now that America died in September, it's interesting. America died in September. In early October, boom, what has happened in Israel has happened. Because America died. America was its greatest protector. When America died, its calling and everything about it died, then that lack of protection became evident. And then it was manifested. But it was building for quite a while. And we're going to start talking about some of the news stories here. I'm going to read this article posted on the 7th of October of 2023. So it was a few days ago, last week. And it says, it was posted on The Sun, the UK newspaper, and the title of it is "Taken by Surprise: Israel's High-Tech Spies and $1 billion Iron Dome Defenses Fail to Stop Hamas Massacring Civilians in quote embarrassing failure." And I don't know if you've heard of this Iron Dome, and this kind of very kind of like vaunted system that Israel has to stop missiles hitting it, you know, that are launched from outside, kind of like a like a mini equivalent of the Star Wars thing that Ronald Reagan wanted to do to implement, so. But that Iron Dome, which apparently was successful for many years, suddenly failed. So I'm going to read here. Hamas launched an all-out attack on Israel despite the country's $1 billion Iron Dome defenses in what experts are calling a quote, embarrassing intelligence failure. The unprecedented morning attack from the terrorist group left hundreds of Israelis and Palestinians dead in a brutal massacre. And then there's some nasty pictures, some missiles being launched, and some buildings exploding. And it says here, in response to the thousands of rockets launched into their territory, Israel declared a state of war against Palestine. International relations professor and Chatham House associate fellow Yossi Mechelberg revealed to The Sun that the surprise attack from Hamas marks a major escalation in Israeli-Palestinian relations. He said, quote, "It's unprecedented because Hamas managed to enter towns, villages, and the rest. Quote, the fact is Israel had a complete intelligence failure, operational failure. The fact that they've managed to enter the country so easily, that's a big embarrassment and a big challenge from a security point of view. Quote, Hamas may have sensed weakness in Israel, and the Palestinian issue was sidelined by the international community. And within the Palestinian political system, they see a little hope of change. There's an accumulated frustration." Unquote. Israel is known for its high technology weapons and defense systems, including drones, which revolutionized the modern battlefield. They also created futuristic robotic unmanned vehicles, which patrol the border of the Gaza Strip. The high-tech nation also launched its first spy satellite into space in 1988. Gaining membership in the exclusive club of just eight nations with independent satellite launching capabilities. But the failure of Israel's, quote, ironclad defense system, which was said to be 90% effective at bringing down targets, has been highlighted in the wake of the attack today, because that's when the attack started, on the 7th of October, which I believe was one day after the end of the Feast of Tabernacles. But I could be wrong on that, I believe. But I could be wrong. So it says here, Israel's renowned $1 billion Iron Dome system could not keep up with the thousands of rockets this morning from Palestine. Then it talks about the counterstrike, Israel, you know, counterattacking and all that. But so the point is that, let me continue reading here. Somebody, not sure who, I think it was David Kalfa, co-director of the North Africa and Middle East Observatory at French think tank The Foundation. The Foundation Jean Jaurès told France 24 that Hamas took advantage of Israel's weakness. So this David Kalfa said here. It says, it's a major failure for the Israeli intelligence services, a failure that could even be described as historic, and without exaggerating, could be compared to what happened in 1973. In 1973, when Israel was attacked and they kicked some Arab butt afterwards, in 1973, when they were attacked severely, they didn't have all this advanced technology. That's what makes it so so incredible. So it says here, this David continues saying, Israel is a country that's on permanent alert, ready to go into battle at any time. It's always on its toes. Quote, it's clear that there were a certain degree of unpreparedness, probably an error in the analysis and estimation on the part of Israeli intelligence services, but also in the preparation of Israeli special forces, unquote. I was kind of correct here. It says, the early morning attack was unleashed into Israeli territory on Shemini Atzeret, a major Jewish holiday. Mecklenburg said he doesn't believe the date is coincidence, as October the 7th marks the 50th anniversary of the Yom Kippur War between Israel and Palestine. He explained, it's a Jewish holiday today. It's also the Sabbath. This would be the right time to do that. And Hamas probably succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. Yeah, so they did it on a Sabbath, because October the 7th was a Saturday. It was the day of the last recording. So as we were recording, that was the day of the attack. And I think I saw the headline right before I started recording, because we record this in the early hours of Saturday. But the thing is that, they keep talking here in the article about, the things that happened and the counterattack and all that. But what we wanted to point out is how unprecedented this was, that this Iron Dome of protection, everything, and the country being on high alert, all this fancy intelligence and the satellite that's been around since 1988 with all this intelligence information gathering. And even so, they got caught off guard, and the enemy just infiltrated in an unprecedented way. Why is that? Because the veil has been removed. As it was said, the truth had declared on the 14th of May of 2018, the veil of protection over Israel was removed. And now Israel is on its own, and let's see how good it is at defending itself by its own righteousness without admitting the error of its ways or the internal contradiction of its ways. Either it's living in self-delusion, or it needs to tell the world, you're all wrong, we're right, and to try to convince the world to get them to follow their truth. It's either or. You can't have it both ways. But being a hypocrite, receiving money from the followers of, from their perspective, the false Mashiach, an imposter, receiving help and protection from them. Now it turns out their greatest protector is dead. America died on the 18th of September, 2023. And 20 days later, or almost, 19 days later, or 18 or 19 days later, they got attacked severely. And it was so bad that I don't know if you heard about these flying things. I forget what they're called, that these terrorists were flying, low-flying things, weird things. These people are complaining about all the poverty and lack. And where do they get all this machinery? But that's another story. But the thing is that they were flying these things, and they flew into this concert that was a peace concert where all these naive morons were dancing for peace, and a lot of them were anti-Israeli, and many of them were, being Jews, were opposed to how Israel treats the Palestinians. And so it's ironic that that's how the Palestinians thank them for their support. And so I really have very little, compassion for the people there. And, all these naive fools dancing for peace, thinking that this world is this kumbaya fantasy land. They don't realize evil is evil. So let them get a dosage of it. Frankly, I don't give a damn. Pardon my French. I feel no mercy. It's a little sorrow, but not much more than that, to be frank. And let me read another article here from the Gateway Pundit. And it's more or less the same storyline. This was posted on the 10th of October of 2023. And the headline says, Leo Homan, that's a name, so he said, why were Israelis so defenseless against Hamas terrorists going house to house, killing and raping? And it says, it talks about, all the horrific things that happened. And then he says, looking at all these things, why didn't the Israelis fight back? Many of us, myself included, assume that with Israel being surrounded on all sides by such vicious enemies and living in such close proximities to them, that the Israelis lived with firearms at the ready in all of their houses. That assumption would be wrong. According to my sources, the Israeli government makes its citizens jump through so many hoops that less than 2% of Israeli citizens are licensed to own a pistol, and it's virtually impossible to own a rifle. If you're among the ranks of retired military, you're allowed to own a rifle, but you cannot store it in your house unless you're among the top elite commandos. This answers the question of why didn't they fight back? They were left as sitting ducks by their government leaders, who are frankly just as corrupt as our leaders in Washington. They're not in office to protect the people, and because they're so corrupt, they fear the people. And the first order of business for a corrupt government that no longer represents the interests of the people is to disarm the people. Now then, you know, he goes on his Second Amendment thing. And I don't disagree with, you know, that, you know, the idea that they should have guns. It just bothers me when they start going on the Second Amendment route, because it's like, it's not that I have anything against the Second Amendment. I believe in that, but there's this spirit that goes with it. When you go down that road with them, you go down to some bad place. I don't know how to explain it. You go down to a bad place, because it's this deception, this lack of understanding. They keep thinking that the fight is with literal weapons, and it's more than that. But that's another story. The thing is that he mentions the, and this kind of makes me think of, you know, how people who want to own guns legally have to jump through hoops, and it makes me think of America and gun control, how the Democrats make it like hell on earth for anyone who wants to own a gun legally to own it. But then all these, you know, gangsters and all these thugs and criminals, you know, get their guns, you know, very easily without any problem and go around shooting people. And the Democrats have no problem with that. It's sort of like similar to what happens with immigration. People who want to do immigration the right way, the right people who want to come to America for the right reasons, have to go through hell to make it into this land. Whereas the people who don't, pardon my French again, I guess that's the title of this recording, don't give a damn. The people who don't give a damn about coming to, who don't give a damn about the values of this country, who come here to rape it, just like these Gaza rapists in Israel, they are allowed, you know, free entrance. Just come on in. You know, 10 million, I think, have come in the last year. I mean, when you think about it, 10 million is like, my goodness, that's mind-boggling. But the people who want to do it legally, they have to line up at the embassy of their countries of origin, go through all the hell, and then most of the time they get rejected even before even getting started. And those who are able to get started then, and who somehow miraculously make it into the country, have to go through so many things and so many tests, medical things and procedures and interviews and all this stuff. And it's kind of a parallel to that. But the thing is that, that again, this article kind of points out again how vulnerable they are. The protection has been taken away. And this, you could say, well, you know, Israel has always been attacked. It's like the same story every few years. It's always been, you know, there's always been like bombings in Tel Aviv, you know, these bus bombings and stuff like that. So it's like, oh, what's so special about this? No, this is different. If you think, oh, you know, he's exaggerating this and this is just part of life in the Middle East, I'm sorry. If you think like that, you're missing the point. And I'm going to read this article here to show you this. There was a violation that happened this time that had never happened in Israeli history. The Israelites feel violated in a way they have never felt before, despite their history of being attacked by the Arabs for so many years. And let me read this article here, again from The Sun, the UK newspaper. And the article was posted on the 9th of October of 2023, a couple of days after the start of the attack. And it's it says, Michael Clark, the attack on Israel was its 9/11. But here is how its powerful allies like the U.S. and Britain can help it out. I don't know if they're going to be able to help it out, especially the U.S. now dead, you know, with Bite Me. They're not, you know, just look at what he did in Afghanistan. You think he's going to be doing anything to protect Israel. As they would say in New York, forget about it. So it says here, the horrific attack, terrorist attack launched on Israel on Saturday was its 9/11. Not since the country's formation in 1948 has it witnessed so much bloodshed from a terrorist atrocity. It's a huge and traumatic psychological blow to Israelis who long believed their fearsome Israel Defense Forces, IDF, and intelligence assets would keep them safe. That veil of protection that we were talking about. That's been shattered now. Terror group Hamas, which has been in sole control of the Gaza Strip since 2007, planned this attack carefully. First, it made sure Israel's Iron Dome anti-missile system was overwhelmed by what Hamas says were 5,000 rockets. Israel says it was around half that number. Then it breached Gaza's borders, still controlled by Israel, after it pulled its military and settlers from the Strip in 2005. Hamas terrorists swarmed across the border in a number of places, which was reminiscent of Islamic State surging into Iraq in 2016. Murdering, hostage-taking, and looting as they went, they reached as far as the city of Afakim, 14 miles east of Gaza. Innocent young people at the Supernova dance party in the desert near Kibbutz Re'im seemed to have been targeted in a coordinated fashion. Hamas gunmen are said to have attacked the festival from two sides. Panicked festival goers who jumped in their cars to escape were killed or taken hostage after terrorists set up roadblocks around the site. The Hamas attack on Israel was pure terrorism from start to finish. The operation was designed to kill or capture as many civilians as they possibly could. The Palestinian Islamists couldn't have pulled this off alone. The deathly hand of Iran is also behind this outrage. Iran funnels Hamas weapons and cash to the tune of $100 million a year, which is about 70% of its funding. Imagine that. You would think that they would build schools and start companies and stuff like that with that money, but apparently not. Whether they actually ordered this attack or not, the Iranians must have known about its advance. Shia Muslim Iran is keen to sabotage a normalization of relations agreement between Israel and its deadly Sunni Islam foe, Saudi Arabia. See, that's the, and here comes Jared, because it says here, part of the so-called Abraham Accords, the deal America has been trying to broker, has been making slow but steady progress. The outcome of this attack is that agreement now goes into cold storage, at least for a while, and maybe forever. That suits the Iranians. They really didn't want an Israeli-Saudi pact to reshape the politics of the Middle East. So, Abraham Accords, that's the Jared Kushner stuff. The Saudis, you know, signing these meaningless agreements with Israel and Netanyahu and all these morons thinking, okay, now we're good and everything is wonderful. And no, it's just meaningless. It was just a meaningless sense of peace. And they let down their guards, thinking, okay, we're being finally being accepted by the Arab world. And now the Iranians came to sabotage all that. It was just fluff. It's the Antichrist, the false peace agreement, if you want to put it in Christian eschatological terms. So this is just validation of all of that. So it continues talking about the Iron Dome defenses and Hezbollah, which is controlled by Iran as well. And Russia is an ally of Iran, having both supported Bashar al-Assad's regime in the Syrian civil war. Assad is an evil man. he should never have survived past 2003. But Bush's fault, we've talked about this at length before. Assad should not even be mentioned anymore since 2003. But Bush messed it up, and he listened to the wrong people and didn't do what he had to do in the Iraq War. And if he had done the right thing, the Middle East would have been totally transformed. A real peace would have come to the Middle East. But that's another... We've talked about that before, so we'll talk about that again here. Iran supplies Russia with Shahed 136 loitering drones. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, which it has used against Ukraine. I don't think Russia had much to do with the Hamas attack, as they have their hands full with their own war. So then he keeps on talking. But the thing, what I do want to highlight is Russia is an ally of Iran. All these conservatives, pardon my French again, sons of bitches across America who are opposed to, you know, to supporting Ukraine against Russia. And Russia suddenly, and Vladimir Putin suddenly is this paragon of freedom and liberty, fighting for the freedoms and the liberties of the people and against the woke culture. And they don't realize Russia is an ally of Iran. Iran is no friend of America. One of their top five songs in their countdown is Death to America. And the thing is that they don't see the contradiction. You know, that's why the conservatives are in America are a piece of trash. That's why the country is dead, because they don't realize how self-contradictory they are. Just like the Israelis are so self-contradictory, hypocritically receiving support from the followers of the false Messiah, supposedly, yet holding on to their idea that their Messiah is coming. So the thing is that. Okay, so then it talks about the U.S. and all that helping, but that's a pipe dream. Another article we want to quickly mention here, and we're running short of time, but we'll try to do this quickly. It says, Hezbollah fires rockets into Israeli contested areas in solidarity with Palestinians. Threatens escalation of Israel and U.S. will not stop its, quote, foolishness. And the reason why I felt the need to share this article, this was posted on the gatewaypundit.com again on the 8th of October by this Jim Hoff fellow. But I wanted to mention this, and I'm not going to go into the details of what's being said here, but let me repeat the article. There was one word that caught my attention. I'll repeat the title. It says, Hezbollah fires rockets into Israeli contested areas in, quote, solidarity with Palestinians, threatens escalation if Israel and U.S. will not stop its, quote, foolishness. And let me now go back to the thing we were kind of paraphrasing from the article that we posted on the website where these recordings are posted. Posted this article on the 20th of December of 2022, of last year. Let me read part of what was written here. 70 years since since Palestine was given back to them, 70 years to begin to acknowledge the foolishness of their ways, and to begin to seek the truth, and not their own version of it. So, and then the word foolishness, to acknowledge their foolishness. And America is also a nation of fools. You know, that's why we just died as a nation on September the 6th through the 18th. And interesting how this guy, these evil Hezbollah people are saying the threatened escalation of Israel and U.S. will not stop its foolishness. He's being prophetic without realizing it, if you catch what I'm trying to say. the Arab people have a visionary quality to them. They are they have a visionary personality, you know, all distorted, and that's why they go into terrorism and all that stuff. But they have a visionary personality in their DNA. And so he's, without realizing it, saying things beyond his own understanding, because visionaries tend to do that. They tend to speak beyond their own natural understanding. They say things that their mind doesn't quite grasp, but they're saying it, and it's true. And he's basically kind of pointing out this is happening because of the foolishness of the Israelis and America. And it's going to get worse until, you know, the Israelis recognize their foolishness. The exact same word that we used in that posting on December 20th, 2022. Not a coincidence. You can take it as you wish. And I hope you're receiving or at least perceiving what we're sharing here, that all of this is happening because the veil has been removed from Israel. And it says here in another article, it's from the dailymail.com, and it was posted on the 10th of October, 2023. And the headline says, Netanyahu vows to turn Gaza into rubble. Israeli PM tells Palestinians to leave now and says Hamas will pay an unprecedented price after they kidnapped Grants and launched a shocking attack that has left hundreds dead on both sides. I think part of the reason that we wanted to mention this article is Netanyahu himself. So Netanyahu is acting tough and he's going to fight back and all that. But the problem is, let me say this, and I can't tell you the source because I don't remember it exactly. And this may sound like speculation, but I do believe that what I'm saying is the truth. And you can take it however you wish. By coincidence, some days ago, I don't know if it was before this Gaza thing happened or after, I don't remember, because it was like unconnected or disconnected from this. I was looking for some videos online, and I ran into this video from this Christian channel or whatever, and they were talking about a whole bunch of stuff, and I tried to listen. It was kind of difficult to listen to a lot of it, but I tried to kind of battle through it. and then he said something interesting. He started talking about Netanyahu and the secret deals he was trying to do with different nations, Arab nations. And he was saying, and mind you, this is not a guy who's critical of Israel, and I don't think he's even critical of Netanyahu too much, because Netanyahu is kind of loved by conservatives and stuff. I despise the man, as I think I've shared before, and it's mentioned, there's an explanation of why he's despised by yours truly on the website where these recordings are posted. But the thing is that he started talking about how he has heard from different people that Netanyahu has been trying to do these side deals with Arab nations, but without telling people. And he was quoting Netanyahu that he has on several occasions talked about, that you don't make public deals that you're trying to work out with other people until the deal is successful. Because if the deal, if the deal falls through, then nobody knows about it. Then, no harm done, no foul, no harm, no foul. But if the deal is successful and it has some good things to offer, then he can say and defend it with the public and say, hey, we had this deal with these evil people, but it's because, you know, they're going to give us this and this and that. Because if people find out that he's doing these, trying to broker these deals with these enemies, people might find out and you know, call him out on it and you know, kind of treat him like a traitor and make him, so he's a sneaky man. That's what I want to point out. There's something, when he smiles, there's something devilish about him. I don't know how to explain it. There's something that emanates from his photographs. There's something sneaky about him, like he knows something you don't know, and he's laughing on the inside, like, oh, he, I know I'm doing this, and you don't know about it, but I'm doing it. And he's a hypocrite. He visited the White House recently and was with Joe Biden, you know, shaking hands and talk. You know why? Because he was looking for, he's a bit Machiavellian. So he comes to America to look for money and support. He doesn't care that he's dealing with Joe Biden, the fraudster. So he was, you know, so supportive and buddy buddies with Trump. And now a man of principle would say, I would never shake hands with that worthless bastard boy, bite me, son of a bitch who will burn in hell very soon. I'm not going to shake hands with that worthless turd. I'm not going to give him any credibility by visiting him as if he were the president of the United States. He is a thief, an imposter, a fraudster. He's a thief. That's what he is. Just a thief, a corrupt pedophiliac of a thief. So the thing is that, but he doesn't care. That's what he is. You know, he tries to shape himself as the tough conservative fighting for traditional values, but he's the one who initiated the mini Holocaust in Israel by forcing all the Israelis to inject themselves with that deadly poison. He's the one who did one of the most drastic lockdowns in the world during the pandemic nonsense. This is no champion of freedom and the truth. He likes to be liked. He does what is needed to be popular and liked, and he says what needs to be said to just portray an image, but he's not what he portrays himself to be. And he is, and it's interesting that he's the one in charge when all of this is happening, because the Israelites put him back in power. He had lost power. He was put back in power. This useless turd was put back in power, and now they are suffering this heavy attack on his watch as a testimony that of what he is on the inside. And cursed is Israel for embracing that man, and they deserve all that they're getting because they have decided to stay in their foolishness. And the leader who they have is a reflection of that foolishness. And so I'm going to read another posting here. Now, we're getting close to the end because we're running out of time. I'm going to read another article, a part of another article, and this is part of what we wanted to get back to get go full circle back to Jared. because there's an advert on television, there used to be, there was this phrase, you know, he went to Jared. And it was, Jared is the place where you buy these engagement rings or whatever, this jewelry place. And so they would say, he went to Jared, as if to say he went to Jared to buy the engagement ring that he's now, proposing matrimony with to his fiance. So he went to Jared. And that's what Trump kept doing. He went to Jared all the time. And Jared kept filling his head with stupidity, Jared is very much responsible for him being bamboozled by the whole pandemic nonsense and Tony Fauci and all that stuff and the rape by injection. When everything is uncovered and all these things are exposed and made evident to all, what I'm saying is going to be confirmed. The thing is that Jared, you know, was the one that he would send because it's the beloved brother, son-in-law, who's married to my wonderful little whore of a daughter. So he would send Jared to the Middle East. And let me read the headline here. This was posted on the 7th of October, the day of the attacks, when the attacks began. "We brought so much peace to the Middle East, only to see bite me, whittle it away," unquote. President Trump releases a statement on Hamas war on Israel. I read that headline and it just brought so much sadness and anger to me, because Trump, just like he's still convinced that he's the champion of American health by promoting Operation Warp Speed, now he's convinced, instead of, that's how trapped he is. He actually thinks that the peace accords, all these futile peace accords that were signed through Jared, were promoting peace. What kind of peace did it promote? Look at what's going on right now. How valuable are those futile, meaningless peace agreements? All they did was lower the Israelis' guard. He doesn't see that. He's not aware. He does not want to admit that his relationship with Jared was like having a relationship with Satan, with the Antichrist, with the beast 666. He doesn't understand that. So he's now boasting about how much peace he brought. What peace? What peace did he bring? There was nothing going on in the Middle East. All these agreements were not... See, he never dealt with the root issue. That's the problem. All these... He was doing the art of the deal. That's what he was doing, the art of the deal. Let's do a deal here, a deal there. But he never dealt with the real issue. I mean, if you want to do the art of the deal, you should be doing the art of dealing with the real issue. Not dealing and wheeling and dealing with people just to... You're not in the market. You're not shopping for vegetables in the market. You're trying to solve real problems. What is the solution for peace in the Middle East? It's not these meaningless Jared deals. It is it's a framework where you say there's not going to be a two-state solution. That's never going to work. You give them an arm, they'll take the leg and the rest of the body. You arm them, you empower them with a state, and look at what they're going to do. It's like raising a wolf, wolves can be tamed to a certain extent, but it's like raising having a poisonous snake as a pet. Eventually, it's going to strike you. You can pet it all you want, give it all the food you want. It's eventually going to bite and kill you. You can't have that as a pet. But the thing is that that's not the solution. The solution is a one-state solution where Israel is recognized as a sovereign nation and where the Palestinian people are given the opportunity to blend into Israeli society and become full-fledged citizens. A lot of people don't realize this, but one-third of Israel's population, of Israel's citizens who vote in Israeli elections, are Arabs. People keep thinking, it's just the Jews and then Arabs are marginalized and living in the Gaza Strip and all that. No, one-third of the Israeli voting population citizens are Arabs. It's two-thirds Jews, one-third Arabs. The Arabs in Israel are the freest Arabs in the world. they are living in the most democratic state for Arabs on earth. They enjoy freedoms and liberties that no other Arab in the entire Middle East enjoys. See, if they wanted to integrate into Israeli society, they would have no problem integrating. But that should be the solution. You are going to integrate and assimilate into society. And we have to also evangelize the world about the origin of the Palestinian conflict. People think that the Palestinians were living there one day, you know, just farming and prospering and having their wonderful little culture and towns and cities and their markets and all that. And then suddenly these evil Jews showed up in 1948 and took over and drove them out into the Gaza Strip and to these other places. And it was never like that. A lot of the Jews were already there. I mean, people don't realize it. It's not like all the Jews left Palestine. There were a lot of Jews there. Then, yes, a lot of them did, you know, migrate into you know, what's now Israel. But the Arabs who were living there, they were allowed to stay. They were not driven out. That's why a third of the citizens are Arabs. I mean, that's how that happened. The Palestinians were not living there. The Palestinians were in Jordan. The Palestinians were Jordanians. They were driven out by the king of Jordan. The son of a bitch was the father of the current king, if I'm not mistaken. When he saw Israel being born, he hated Israel. He wanted to cause trouble. So he took all these Palestinians that he had in his kingdom of Jordan, and he drove them out of Jordan and into Israel. Because Jordan and Israel, as you may know, are, you know, border each other. So he drove them into Israel, and said, "You know, we kicked you out of the country. Now you are countryless. That's your land. You're Palestinians. This is Palestine. This is your country now." So the Palestinians felt displaced, like they were not belonging. But it was because they were kicked out of Jordan. They were driven into Israel, and that's when they started claiming, "This is our land." So it was a problem that Jordan handed over to Israel because they wanted to destabilize Israel from within. And so that's what Trump and all these people should be evangelizing about, talking about the history, going to the UN and saying these things, going to press conferences and repeating it over and over again and saying over and over again, Israel there's no two-state solution. It's a one-state solution, and the Palestinians have to walk. And whatever Arabs want to live in Israel, they have to embrace Israel, recognize the legitimacy of the Israel nation, and Trump and all these people should also be evangelizing about how there's a historical connection between that land and the Jews. It's not like the Jews showed up in 1948 and had never lived there. What about David? And what about Solomon? What about the times of, you know, the quote false Mashiach, the times of Jesus? You know, who was living in Israel at the time? Palestinians? What the hell are you talking about? You have to be a moron to think that. No, there was Jews. When the Romans went to conquer that territory, they didn't say, "We're going to go conquer Arab Palestinians." No, they went to conquer Jews. They took over Jerusalem. They didn't think, "Oh, we just conquered an Arab capital called Jerusalem." No, they knew they were conquering a Jewish city, full of Jews, full of synagogues, full of rabbis and Pharisees and all these people. They were all Jews living in that land. It's not like there's no historical connection between Israel and that land. All of these things are part of bringing true peace to that region. Not these worthless accords. Worthless, worthless. And then Trump, as a moron, the moron that he is, starts claiming that he brought so much peace. Surface stuff. That's all it is. Surface. Nothing underneath. The same thing, the problem with America. That's why America died. Always dealing with surface issues, never dealing with the root issues. And just to validate how wonderful those accords were, there's another headline. And it's ironic, the same guy who posted what I just read about Trump praising himself for the peace in the Middle East, he, 3 days earlier, posted another article that says, Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and Qatar released statements holding Israel responsible for Hamas attacks. In other words, the Saudis and Qatar sided with Hamas against Israel. These are the same countries that signed those accords with Jared. They went to Jared and signed these accords with Israel because they, you know, because there was financial interest. That was just money. That's all it was. There was nothing of value there, nothing of substance. It was just meaningless financial transactions and other minor things, but there wasn't a real sign of recognizing Israel and being at peace with it. The moment this happens, the hell with those accords, the first thing they say is they condemn Israel and support Hamas. So the same guy, Jim Hoft, who posted these two articles, doesn't realize, you know, the contradiction. Trump is saying, and he's supporting Trump, obviously, because he's a Trump, very big Trump supporter. He's supporting Trump, you know, he brought peace and stability and so much happiness to the Middle East through his accords through Jared. And then the same people that signed those accords with Jared are condemning Israel. So what was the value of that, quote, peace that Trump brought through these deals? You see what I'm saying? It is so sad. That's why the judgment of the truth is on Trump. Cursed is Trump, just like Israel, and he will pay for all of this, very dearly. So, to continue on this theme, and we're about to finish. There was another article posted on a website called thenationalnews.com. Thenationalnews.com. It was posted on the 8th of October, one day after the second day of, you know, of the conflict. And the headline says, two Israelis killed in Egypt attacked. A policeman opened fire on tourists in Alexandria. So it says two Israeli tourists were killed on Sunday in the Egyptian city of Alexandria, police officials said. They said a policeman on routine duty in the city's Manshia district randomly, quote, opened fire at a group of Israeli tourists visiting Pompey's Pillar, one of the city's Roman era landmarks. An Egyptian was killed and another wounded in the attack, said the officials. The suspect has been detained and the wounded taken to hospital. The Israeli foreign minister confirmed that two Israelis were killed along with their tour guide. It says here, two women were shouting in Hebrew as Egyptian policemen stood by. A third man, apparently wounded, sat on the ground next to one of the two bodies. There have been incidents in the past when Egyptian policemen opened fire on Israelis or were killed in attacks on the border between Egypt and Israel. In June, an Egyptian policeman on duty at the border killed three Israeli soldiers before he was killed. In 2011, assailants who came from Sinai, killed eight Israelis in an ambush north of the city of Eilat, at the northern end of the Dead Sea's Gulf of Aqaba. Pursuing Israeli soldiers killed seven of the attackers and five Egyptian policemen. Peace treaty, it says here. Egypt and Israel are bound by a peace treaty signed in 1979. And that's, you know, the treaty with Sadat, who was a hero and a martyr. He was assassinated 2 years later because of the peace he signed with Israel. But the thing is that what I wanted to mention here is pardon my French again, but what the hell were these two Israelis doing in Egypt? I know this happened just a couple of days after the conflict started, so it's not because of the conflict. I mean, even if there was no conflict in Gaza, it's why are Israelis in Egypt? Especially, Egypt has been turning very, very Muslim, very radical in recent years. Why would you even go there? And that shows this sense of invulnerability. Like feeling, no, we are protected. We have this veil of protection over us, the shield protecting us. And they don't realize that on the 14th of May, 2018, the veil was removed. And they are no longer safe. They're no longer protected. And their greatest protector, America, is dead. So they're on their own, practically. And it's like the same thing that I think about when I think about British tourists who visit. I don't know why British tourists love to go to Qatar and Dubai and all these places. And I always read these stories about all these tourists who go there, and I go, why would you go there? Why, especially women? Why? And they go to these beaches and they can take their clothes off and all that, And you go, why would you even go to a place like that where women are oppressed so profoundly? There's even a contradiction. Like, why do they allow the tourists to get undressed in the beaches and frolic all about like that? And their own women are have to wear clothing from head to toe in 100 degree Fahrenheit heat. And why would you as a European support that and provide funding for that and support and put yourself in a vulnerable situation where you do something that offends them and suddenly you're in jail, in prison, and you can't claim First Amendment rights or Second Amendment rights or whatever amendment rights. You can't claim anything. You're trapped in an oppressive, tyrannical society and regime, and it will take a mammoth effort to get you out. Why would you expose yourself like that? And it's when you think you're not vulnerable, when you're invincible, and that's what happened to these tourists. And I feel bad for them in a certain way, but I go, well, you should have known. You should have never been in Egypt to begin with. But it's this sense that they have always felt protected, like supernaturally protected. That protection is gone. It's gone, baby. It's gone. I'm going to read another article here very quickly. October the 8th, posted again on thegaywaypundit.com. June Palestinian report, U.S. arms left by Joe Bite Me in Afghanistan reach Gaza. And that's why they have all this equipment to fight and all these, things that they were flying into this dance party. It's amazing. It's like these floating drones with people on them. I don't know how to describe it, like mini helicopters. They were flying in and shooting and killing people as they ran from them. And they have all this weaponry. Why do they have all this weaponry? Because of all the weapons, son of a bitch, Bite Me left behind. $8 billion worth, or $80 billion worth, I forget how much it was. Regardless, whether it was 8 or 80, it's still too much. $1 would have been too much to leave behind. We beat those bastards in Afghanistan, in the Taliban. We kick butt and control the country. Why do we leave in defeat like that? I mean, if you're going to leave, yes, eventually we had to leave, but how are you going to leave in such shame and leave all these weapons behind? Well, it's because the country, America, was on its way to dying, and the fact that now these weapons have reached Gaza, these weapons provided by America have reached Gaza, and it's a reflection of how now that its big Christian protector is dead, Israel, it's on its own and it's vulnerable. It can no longer depend on America to be protected, because in fact, America is not going to be arming their enemies against them. And one other thing I wanted to say, it's just like a side note, but I feel it's relevant, and it kind of brings us full circle in a sense. I found this headline on one of those conservative sites that I go to read news, so they linked to this article. And I don't know why they decided to link to this article, but I just found it curious that they did. And I know there's a purpose behind it. And it's the article is at on the Times, the website is timesofisrael.com. And it was posted on the 10th of October, 2023. And the headline says, Argentinian FM says, seven nationals killed in Hamas assault in Israel. So the article says, seven Argentinian nationals were killed in the attacks by Hamas terrorists in Israel this weekend, and 15 more are still unaccounted for, Argentina's foreign minister, Santiago Cafiero, says, according to Reuters. And that's all it says. That's a very short article. So, and I found this interesting because, well, first of all, many people don't know this, but there's a significant Jewish population in Argentina. They have a lot of Jews in Argentina, which is kind of ironic because Argentina is also known as the place where a lot of Nazis went to hide. But Argentina, Buenos Aires, has a significant Jewish population. And interestingly, you know, this the Times of Israel decided to talk about these seven nationals, Argentinians, who might be Argentinian Jews, who were killed in the Hamas assault. And this brings us full circle, because what we said about the protection of Israel being lifted was posted on this December 20th, 2022, 2 days after the end of the World Cup in Qatar, which supposedly, quote, and I say this with big quotes, Argentina won, and which it didn't. We've just explained why we say that. The reality is the World Cup ended in a tie, and there are no more World Cups. All these other World Cups are irrelevant. They don't count anymore. They do not matter. They have no relevance. They're useless, wastes of time. There's nothing of any relevance to them. The last World Cup was in that horrible country in 2022, and it ended in a tie with no one winning. And and that's when I realized what happened in that World Cup. You know, that made me realize, yes, America is dead. So Argentina's supposed victory through deception and trickery signaled the end of America, and America will become an Argentina in 30 years or less. They will talk about how they will make comparisons between the decline of Argentina in the early 1900s and the decline of America, of the United States of America, in the early 21st century. They will make the comparisons. So it's interesting that this we are ending with this. Seven nationals dying. And even the seven is significant, and 15 more unaccounted for. That makes for 22. 22 is the number of divorce and separation, and it's fitting that we end with this, because it just goes full circle that it was after the World Cup in Qatar, one of the countries that Jared signed deals with. It was after that we announced that the veil of protection had been removed from Israel since the 14th of May of 2018. It is all related, and it's all confirmed. And that's what we wanted to talk about, how Israel is no longer protected. And they are getting the consequences of their actions. They have not been protected since the 14th of May of 2018. Thank you very much for listening.